Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Caught on video, the sick moment a deadbeat dad is caught carrying the limp body of his son, Corey, just six, into urgent care. This after physically forcing Corey to run full speed on a treadmill because the boy was, quote, too fat. Six-year-old Corey is now dead. Tonight, why did Daddy go on the run and hide out in a Tennessee motel? While his defense lawyer claims Daddy had nothing to do with Corey's death, from chronic abuse and bruising to the heart, we want justice. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Corey was in Chris's arms. His arms were over Chris's shoulders. His legs were dangling. His arms did not look like they had much movement to them. His legs did not look like they had much movement to him. His head was rested on Chris's shoulder. His face was difficult to visualize. So when I first approached them, I knew that something was concerning, but I couldn't see everything I needed to see. So I was depending on Chris to convey a sense of urgency or unwellness that I did not get from him at first. It was more of a clinical description.
You are hearing William Doyle, a nurse practitioner at Southern Ocean Urgent Care. And when you hear a professional speak, the way it just doesn't even make sense. He says his face was difficult to visualize. I think what he meant to say is the little boy was near death and he couldn't even hold his head up. That's why his face is difficult to visualize. And as a nurse practitioner says, Chris, I believe he is referring to the bio dad, Christopher Greger, the deadbeat dad that didn't seem upset and wouldn't really articulate what had happened. Gee, I wonder why. In the last hours in court, the chilling texts are revealed, and this tastes like dirt in my mouth, where the father writes, quote, he needs to toughen up, talking about the six-year-old little boy. He says this after making his son, Corey, run the treadmill. He dies. He, quote, needs to toughen up. Again, thank you everyone for joining us. I know evidence is sometimes very hard to look at, but a jury is being asked to render a true verdict. Guys, take a listen to Sydney Sumner, Crime Online.
Brianna Michelow is supposed to drop Corey off to his father. Greger asks her to bring Corey to the fitness center of his apartment complex. Surveillance video inside the gym shows Corey running on a treadmill while Greger turns up the speed and incline of the machine until the six-year-old can't keep up and falls off. Greger lifts the boy off the ground by his shirt, holding Corey over the running treadmill. Corey's feet slide out from under him several times as he tries to get his footing, and Greger appears to bite Corey on the back of the head. Corey eventually starts running again and falls from the treadmill five more times. Through tears, Corey tells the doctor about the treadmill incident and says Greger forced him to run because he was too fat. The doctor notes 14 bruises or scrapes on Corey's body, but the rest of his tests come back normal. Michelow's request for emergency custody is denied, and she returns Corey to Greger the next morning.
When I hear the reporter describing all the bruises on Corey's little body, and I watch Corey so valiantly trying to keep running every time his father throws him back on the treadmill, even holding him down, and you can see him forcefully biting him. But this is what the defense attorney has to say. You got to hear this. Listen.
You're going to see Christopher go over to that treadmill and speed it up. And you're going to see Corey fall. And you're going to see him pick that boy up six times. And six times put him back on the treadmill. And I'm gonna tell you right now, you're not gonna like him. And I don't care if you like him. When you see that video, you're gonna be horrified. You're gonna be mortified. But I'm telling you right now that the evidence you're going to see of Corey's death had absolutely nothing to do with that treadmill.
With me, an all-star panel, including Jim Murdoch from News 12 New Jersey Reporter. And if you want more on the trial, go to News 12 New Jersey, News 12 New York. Jim, hold on just a moment. Dr. Bethany Marshall, you got to get my head straight. Dr. Bethany Marshall, renowned psychoanalyst, joining us at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, did you hear what the defense attorney just said? What, am I supposed to believe him or my lying eyes? How the hey is he saying, oh, look over here, not over here at the video. Don't look at the autopsy report. Look at me, what I'm saying in court. What does he think? They just fell off the turnip truck? That the jury is stupid?
Nancy, he's manipulating the jurors. Also, now we have two men abusing power. Deadbeat dad abused power by using his child as a punching bag. Never mind, he was also only involved with the child in the last year of his life, wanting to gain control over the child in order to abuse him. Isn't it interesting that he has sought an attorney who does the same? In some ways, I think the attorney is like deadbeat dad, trying to control the jurors, trying to have power over them. It's like male power on parade, and it's just very sickening.
Speaking of male power on the parade, I'd like to welcome everyone on our panel, including a lot of males, Dr. Bethany. So you want to maybe back off on the male power on parade thing until the very end when they can't leave. Okay, Jim Murdoch joining me, News 12 investigative reporter out of New Jersey. Jim, thank you for being with us. What is happening in the courtroom? How is the jury reacting? I mean, how can the defense attorney with a straight face say the dad had nothing to do with it?
So thanks for having me on, Nancy. I think one of the important factors here, before they showed that treadmill video in court, they played the video before the dad kept putting him up and down on the treadmill. So in that courtroom, a video played for 12 minutes showing that little boy running at full speed while the dad in the background was lifting weights and once in a while periodically checking in on him. So I think this has been missed in a lot of the reports we've seen online, but that child had been running for 12 full minutes before the dad sped it up. And the video looked like he was running at full speed for a child of 6 years old. So you go in the courtroom, we're sitting there in the front row, and we're watching in complete silence, along with the, at that time, there were 16 jurors seated for 12 minutes. And then the video played showing the dad what you're showing right now. So you have to go back 12 minutes. This child had been running at full speed before the speed and the incline were increased, Nancy.
Jim Murdoch, guys, joining, he's been on the story from the beginning. And again, let me correct myself. This is not a story. This is a real case. People are suffering. And every time I look at that little boy, Corey, running and falling, face planting and falling and literally thrown back on there, Jim Murdoch, I think of my little boy, John David, and my little girl, Lucy, and I imagine their head on that little body running and running and falling, and I can hardly stand it. But I got to ask you about something, Jim Murdoch. Are you telling me that in court there were 12 minutes of silence?
Of silence while we were watching that little boy run before the dad sped up the treadmill. 12 minutes of silence broken up when they switched to that video, and then there were audible gasps from quite a few people in that courtroom. But 12 minutes of silence watching that boy run.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Jarrett Fiorentino joining me, homicide prosecutor. Jarrett, I remember on several occasions, I would use the time it took, for instance, to asphyxiate someone, maybe 2 or 3 minutes. I'll have to go to Dr. Eric Easton on that in court. For instance, hold the pillow down in front of a jury and push it down and have complete silence for 3 minutes. It's so powerful because the jury then understands how long the father had to have saved his son all of this suffering, or how long the defendant took to perform the act. What Jim Murlock just told us is, I mean, drop the mic right there, Fiorentino.
It's so, there's something about this video, Nancy, that gets harder to watch every time you watch it, because you watch this little boy trying to get up. He's trying to please his father is what he's trying to do, and to probably stop the abuse that he's getting. But like you said, the length of time is so telling. Every second of those 12 minutes, his father could have stopped this. And in my opinion, he's charged with first degree murder right now. Every second he didn't stop it was another second that shows this is the attitude that this father has toward his son. Reckless disregard, in fact, an intentional act to commit murder.
And guys, wait till you see the text exchanges between the mom, the bio mom, and the bio dad. But I'm going to start calling him the deadbeat dad, because he had nothing to do with his son for years, had to have a paternity suit. I mean, really? Can't the dad just say, okay, yeah, I had sex with her. It's possible. He would not pay any money for this child because he swore he wasn't the dad. And then he finally gets to see the child, and then the child is abused. But I want you to hear about what happened when he takes the baby to the hospital. Listen.
The day after Corey's examination by a pediatrician, Christopher Greger tells Brianna Michelow that Corey is feeling bad. The six-year-old is sleepy and nauseous. Greger puts Corey down for a nap, and when he wakes up, Corey is stumbling, slurring his words, and is having trouble breathing. Greger takes the boy to Southern Ocean Medical Center, where he's quickly admitted and intubated. Doctors take Corey for a CT scan. During the scan, Corey starts seizing and losing his pulse. Medical staff administer life-saving efforts but cannot revive Corey.
The initial autopsy reveals that Corey died as a result of blunt force injuries with cardiac and liver contusions, along with inflammation and sepsis. The Ocean County Medical Examiner lists the manner of death as undetermined. A forensic pathologist performs a second autopsy, confirming the blunt force trauma and injuries to Corey's liver and heart. Corey was chronically abused and suffered an acute traumatic injury to his heart 4 to 12 hours before his death. Corey's death is reclassified as a homicide.
So let me understand, Jim Murdoch, the defense attorney, even in light of the medical examiner stating the boy died of chronic abuse and had essentially contusions, bruises to the heart and other internal organs, they're trying to say, oh yeah, no, that's not why he died. He died from sepsis, from pneumonia. What is the jury doing while the defense attorney is arguing something completely contradictory to what the medical examiner said?
Well, from what I've seen, the jury is paying very close attention to the medical experts.
Jim, you know I hate it when somebody says, I say, what's the jury doing? And the person says, oh, they're paying attention. Okay, all that means to me is their eyes are open. Are they making faces? Do they turn away from the video? Do they glare at the defendant? What are they doing? Do they shake their head no or yes? Anybody, anything, anybody crying? Anything, any reaction?
Not a lot of crying. Again, the biggest outbursts were the gasps when that 12 minutes of running transitioned into 2.5, 3 minutes of falling over and over again. But I can tell you that the jury is focused dead on with the people testifying on the stand. Once in a while, they'll glance over to Christopher Greger sitting down, but there's just a lot of intense looking.
Jim, in your line of business, you know what it means to bury the lead, right? Because you are a veteran investigative reporter. I know all about you. You ever heard bury the lead? You ever heard that phrase?
Yes.
Okay, so the lead is the jury gasps when they see what's happening. You know what that tells me, Jim Murdoch? It tells me the jury is having the same reaction I'm having every time I look at that video. You know what? I've got chills on my right arm right now because I keep thinking of my baby girl, Lucy, or my son, John David, up on that video, falling over and over and over. How in the H-E-double-L did this boy get bruising on the heart? Bruising on other internal organs.
That was the only time so far in the 3 days there were any visible noises, reactions from the jury when that little boy fell over and over. And besides that, it's been constant focus. But you're right. The jury and other people in the courtroom gasped watching this very video.
Christopher Greger called Brianna Michelow to tell her he took their son to the hospital, but did not tell her where. Michelow called several hospitals and could not locate Corey, so she filed a missing persons report. At 5:30 p.m., cops tell Michelow that her son has died just a month before his 7th birthday. After hearing the news of his son's death at the hospital, Christopher Greger packs a bag and leaves for Tennessee. Greger refuses to speak with authorities, requesting an attorney.
Joining us, an all-star panel, a straight out to Dr. Bethany Marshall. Dr. Bethany, you mentioned the defense attorney's intimate involvement in this case, or maybe identifying with this case. But what do you make of what you just heard, that in another power play, the husband, the bio dad, they're not married, refuses to tell the mom which hospital Corey is in?
You know, Nancy, I think there are two possibilities. One is that he's trying to abuse the child's mother, just like he's abusing the child. So when you think of the 12 minutes, that's not just abuse, that's actually torture because it's so prolonged. So in some ways, he kept the bio mom in a tortured state as well. This guy relates on the basis of power to everyone around him. And, you know, when I think of child abuse, there's sort of two types in terms of the profile of the abuser. One is the parent who's overwhelmed, who thinks the child is bad, who doesn't know where the child is developmentally, so they explode, they hurt the child, but then they're remorseful afterwards. This is a very, very different animal, Nancy. This is a man who is a sadist, who's mean. He gained control of the child in the child's 5th year. He wasn't even bonded with the child up until that point. He didn't even care about the child. So he got the child from the mother so he could control, dominate, and abuse. This is the kind of abuser who pumps himself up by finding something small around him so that he can just use that small little thing as a punching bag. And you know, these jurors are traumatized. That's why they gasped and then they were silent. When you read the definition of PTSD, it's not just being abused, it's watching abuse.
To Jim Murdoch, I'm always shocked when deadbeat dads suddenly have a newfound interest in being with their child. Isn't that what happened here?
It certainly seems that way with the paternity test coming in, and then Christopher comes into his life when he's 4 years old, automatically gets full custody with visitation granted to Bree Michelow on this case. And that was talked about at length in the first day of testimony, the events going back and forth with that. I also want to get back to some of the emotions that we saw. We talk about Chris sitting in that courtroom. At the very beginning, when the prosecution began to lay out their opening statement, Chris showed emotion. He cried. And then he did not. And I've been watching the way he handles everything. He's just sitting there once in a while, leaning over to his attorney, Mario, to speak with them. But when the jury's gasping, when we're watching that 12-minute silent video before he falls, Christopher's just sitting there in the courtroom and really not showing a lot of emotion outside of what we saw when the prosecutors laid out the first minutes of their opening statements. It's fascinating to watch, you know. And then when Bree Michelow took the stand on the opening day, immediately her emotions, you know, quite a few times got the best of her. So very different emotional responses watching the defendant in the court and Bree Corey's mother in there. And that those are very notable that I picked up watching from the opening a few hours of this case.
It's not just this day that Corey was forced to run on the treadmill, sustaining blows to his heart and other internal organs. Damning text chains have emerged in court. Listen.
Brianna Michelow posts a text exchange 2 weeks before Corey dies. Michelow writes, "Corey came upstairs upset and almost crying because he was trying to ask you about playing football in high school and you smacked the ball out of his hands and walked out. Gregor replies that I smacked the ball out of his hands and he didn't say a word to me. Gregor then texts that if hitting the ball out of the six-year-old's hands makes him cry, that maybe he needs to be a little tougher because that's soft tissue. After Gregor makes another comment about Corey being over-emotional, Brianna Michelow responds, he's not over-emotional. You hurt his feelings. He got upset. He's 6 years old.
I don't know why abusers blame everybody else when they behave badly and criminally. They claim other people are over-emotional. In fact, Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, high-profile psychoanalyst out of L.A., the mom, the bio mom, was made to look crazy because she had made 100 complaints to DFACS, Department of Family Children's Services, over 20 months to make her look crazy. And also, in addition to the text chain you just heard, and I'm going to go to Jim Murdoch in just a second on this from News 12. And if you want more coverage in depth by the hour in trial, go to News 12 New Jersey, News 12 New York. Dr. Bethany, in addition to what you just heard, I understand that earlier that the dad, the bio dad, the defendant, the killer dad, suspect, deadbeat dad, claimed that Corey's face, wait for it, I hope you're sitting down, you may need to lay down, Bethany, that Corey's face got in the way of a football that dad threw, and it made his nose bleed and his lip bleed.
Nancy, this killer dad is so crazy. You know, abuse, Nancy, always starts with rationalizations. His face got in the way. He's too fat. He needs to toughen up. Whenever I have abusers come into my office, they make the abuse sound so reasonable. You know, one guy once said to me, you know, I pulled my child out of school and I made him walk home to make his bed because he needs to be taught a lesson. So whenever you hear adults talking about children in these demeaning ways, you have to consider abuse. You have to consider reporting. In terms of the mother looking crazy, you know, we have a phrase in my field, it's called crazy making behavior. That's when somebody treats you in such a way that you begin to fall apart and you look like the crazy one. And he made her look so crazy that even DFACS didn't believe her. Not that I want to let them off the hook, but I think that's what happened. And this poor mother is just desperate to help her child, so much so that she has to document the abuse on a Facebook group. Nobody else would listen to her. And just one more quick thought, Nancy. His demeanor in court, my first thought was, this is probably the first time in deadbeat killer dad's life where he has not had the upper hand. He's not been in charge and he's not been in a position of power. He probably doesn't even know how to be, what to do, how to be in this courtroom other than, let's watch, pretty soon he's going to start glaring at the jurors because he's going to try to have power all over again.
To Jim Murdoch joining us, News 12 New Jersey, I want to hear from your perspective of seeing it unfold in court. How did the jury respond to those chilling text messages dad sends after forcing his son to run in on the treadmill? Quote, he needs to toughen up. And the other evidence about his son, 6 years old, face getting in the way of his football thrown at full force. I think he threw it at the little boy and hit him, bam, right in the face.
The two words in those text messages that caught my eye and seemed to catch some of the jurors were the expression soft tissue. You're describing your son as having soft tissue. And it's an expression you just are kind of surprised to hear a dad talking about a bruise, but using that term. And I think that you know, the phrasing, the perhaps the word choice made that phrase stand out, particularly to the people in that courtroom. And you're showing the pictures now. The dad described the boy soft tissue. It's rough to hear.
Brianna Michelo files an order to show cause seeking custody of her son, Corey, while DCPP investigates claims of abuse. The next day in his decision, Judge Patrick Bradshaw says that the order fails to demonstrate that the minor child is in danger of imminent or irreparable harm. Even after reading a report about the treadmill video, Judge Bradshaw writes that the court does not find a temporary modification of the party's custody and parenting time arrangement appropriate at this time.
So now I'm finally getting the name of the judge that wouldn't take the boy away from his father. That little boy, Corey, is now dead. Jim Murdoch joining me, News 12. Dr. Eric Eason and Bill Daly, I'm on the way. Jim Murdoch, the judge, Judge Patrick Bradshaw. Is that correct? Because we had to scour all of the news reports, all of the evidence that we had to get the name of the judge that wouldn't take the boy away from the bio dad. Is that correct, Judge Patrick Bradshaw?
You know, I think you have more information than I do on that judge. All I know is that when Bree took the stand and said how the judge, you know, one day before that child died, she was denied full custody, you could see the helplessness. She was reliving that all over again on the stand. And I think that's so important to highlight and emphasize. Now, again, the defense, they tried to pull into Bree's past drug usage, saying she wasn't a fit mom to take care of that. And that was the defense's argument.
Hold on, Jim Murdoch. You got me drinking out of the fire hydrant here. That's a lot of information, and I'm trying to digest it all. So, typical victim blaming. The mom is a crime victim, too. Her son's been murdered, according to prosecutors. So, hey, what can we do? Let's blame her. Let's find something wrong with her. You know what? If you strung up everybody in this country that's ever had a drug or alcohol problem, there'd be nobody to go to work. Everybody would be strung up. Hold on just one moment. I want you to hear the actual COD and what happened when Corey was taken to the hospital. Listen.
The day after Corey's examination by a pediatrician, Christopher Greger tells Brianna Michelo that Corey is feeling bad. The six-year-old is sleepy and nauseous. Greger puts Corey down for a nap, and when he wakes up, Corey is stumbling, slurring his words, and is having trouble breathing. Greger takes the boy to Southern Ocean Medical Center, where he's quickly admitted and intubated. Doctors take Corey for a CT scan. During the scan, Corey starts seizing and losing his pulse. Medical staff administer life-saving efforts, but cannot revive Corey.
The initial autopsy reveals that Corey died as a result of blunt force injuries with cardiac and liver contusions, along with inflammation and sepsis. The Ocean County Medical Examiner lists the manner of death as undetermined. A forensic pathologist performs a second autopsy, confirming the blunt force trauma.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Dr. Eason, thank you for being with us. Could you, in regular vernacular, i.e. dummy down, doctor, okay? We're not all MDs like you. Could you explain what we just heard in regular people talk?
The autopsy report. So it described contusions, which are bruises. You normally see bruises on the outside of the body, but you can also see them internally. They were found on the heart and on the liver. And so what it indicates to me is that there was some type of blunt force trauma. So solid object struck the chest, also struck the abdomen, causing those bruises. And then the trauma was so rough that not only did it cause a bruise in the heart, but it also split a hole into the heart as well. So that's what we have here.
Dr. Eric Eason, I didn't get that from the testimony. Maybe it was buried in there, because when doctors start testifying, no offense, of course, and they are speaking in technical hospital jargon, Did you say he had a hole in his heart? A hole was torn in his heart?
Laceration, yes. A tear.
A laceration.
Right.
His heart was lacerated. It wasn't just a bruising of the heart. The heart was actually lacerated? Are you sure?
That's right. That's what I got from the articles that we read.
So, Jim Murdoch, is this true? Was Corey's heart actually lacerated or torn?
The injuries described, 12, 14 different bruises, including different bruises as seen by the first grade teacher, Kim Peace, I believe her name was, saw different bruises over that time between the treadmill. And keep in mind, folks, the treadmill incident happened March 20th. April 2nd, Corey was dead. So what we don't know, what happened before March 20th, what shape was the boy in prior to that treadmill, and what injuries were sustained during that treadmill and then following that treadmill incident up until April 2nd. It is the defense's argument from what they said in opening statements that the boy died of pneumonia and sepsis. But we've heard doctors say sepsis can happen from internally bruised, contused organs can also cause sepsis. I think that's going to be a major part of the second half of this trial once the defense has things in their court. And you're going to hear a lot of doctor jargon. One of the things we heard in the opening statements, two pathologists, two very different conclusions here.
Jim Murdoch, I couldn't hear you. You got cut off. Did you tell me there is or is not a laceration to the heart?
They did mention heart bruising or internal organ bruising in the opening statements.
Straight back out to Jim Murdoch joining us from News 12 New Jersey, News 12 New York, where you can see this hour by hour what's happening in the courtroom. Jim, I believe you're correct because you are referring to the first autopsy. I'm talking about Dr. Andrews that then did another, took another pass at it. Did he find the laceration to the heart, Jim?
That is where I believe it was put in documentation that a heart laceration
yes.
was found. So what does that mean? So if the boy died of sepsis, can a heart laceration cause that sort of blood
disease? You know what, Jim? As much as I respect you, I don't think you've got an MD. Neither do I.
No
offense.
I don't.
Dr. Eason, dumb me down again. What's a heart laceration? How do you get a heart laceration? From a severe beating, possibly?
Yes, it's evidence of blunt force trauma. All lacerations are due to blunt trauma, whether they happen on the skin or internally. And so the kid was struck in the chest with a lot of force. That's what's going to cause a tear in the heart.
Bill Daly is joining me, special guest, former FBI investigator, and now specialist in forensic photography and security expert. Bill, thank you for being with us. Bill, have you ever noticed when you bring in a suspect and you kind of got them red-handed, they start saying, look here, look there, it's their fault, it's their fault, not me, SOD, some other dude did it. Have you ever noticed that before?
Absolutely. In fact, there are prisons filled with people who say the same thing. That's exactly what the MO is of individuals who are responsible for committing crimes and other heinous acts. You know, Nancy, if we look at this case, and I am kind of a fact-based person over my years, and just the facts, as Joe Friday once said, if you look at this kind of timeline and litany of the images we've seen images, not just the videos, which are certainly compelling and emotional, but also tell the story when Greg is, as is found on the treadmill, and brings him into the hospital. We have pictures the mother had taken of the injuries of her son, Corey. But what two things stand out to me is, one, we're not seeing all the other things that could have happened behind the scenes when they're not on video, when pictures are not taken. You know, and I also say, what happened? What happened to the system here where all this stuff was so compelling, at least compelling to us as we watch it, that a judge didn't order for some protective custody to take place prior to the child dying, you know, and you know, finally, I'd like to kind of put on top of this, Nancy, is the fact that, you know, my brothers in law enforcement, the people in the Ocean County Prosecutor's Office and investigators from the Ocean County law enforcement agencies have now stated, they've come out and said that Corey suffered life-damaging, life-ending injuries as a result of his time with his father, and that his father, Gregor, is responsible for his death.
You know, another thing, Bill Daly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jim Murdoch, the initial judge said this video is not enough for an emergency order taking the boy away from dad. It's not enough. But then that same video was used to deny Gregor, the bio dad, bail. So for one judge, no way. For another judge, H-E-L-L, yes. So I guess it's in the eye of the beholder. So one judge saw this and saw the report of contusions and all of that and refused to take the boy away. Then the boy dies. And now that same video is used to justify no bail. That's bass-ackwards.
You know, Nancy, I think these images here, why, and the question is, why would someone see it differently than another? It's difficult to say. I think we all are seeing for what it is. And I think, you know, these images, we like to almost have many cases that we work on over the years have such compelling images as we've seen here, as tragic as they are, because it tells the story. And why someone would interpret it one way or the other, I don't understand. And unfortunately, as we know, is that was part of the system here that failed the poor child and led to his ultimately death.
On cross-examination, Christopher Greger's attorney, Mario Gallucci, tries to show a different side of Corey's grieving mother. Gallucci asks Brianna Michelo if she and some friends vandalized the home of Christopher Greger's parents after the death of her son, Corey. When Gallucci asks if she and her friends threw eggs and dead goldfish at the house, Brianna Michelo says she doesn't think it was goldfish, but fish purchased from the supermarket. Michelo admits to throwing rocks, dead fish, bones, and eggs at the home of Gregor's parents.
So we see an age-old tactic being used in court. To Jim Murdoch joining us from News 12 New Jersey, this is after her son is killed. And the mom, nobody would listen to her at all, 100 complaints. She, as Dr. Bethany pointed out, the only thing she could do, she posted on Facebook, basically, can somebody listen to me? So she goes by and throws some dead fish she got at the supermarket at their house. Now what, she's the bad person?
You got to look at the timeline of this. So for months and months after her son died, Christopher was only charged with child endangerment until the murder charges, until that second autopsy came out. So she forms a Facebook group, Justice for Corey. And this was brought up on the second day of testimony as well, trying to find posters in that privately run Facebook group, signs of aggression toward the Greger family. It was brought up briefly. And then Mario, the attorney for Christopher Greger, brought up a dead fish in court. It was objected. It was shut down. But the point was, in the court, this was all happening from a grieving mother's perspective.
Got it. You know, before we run out of time, I want to go to Jarrett Fiorentino, and correct me if my facts are wrong. Jarrett Fiorentino and Bill Daly, you've dealt with so many perps. When they go on the run, flight is evidence of guilt. And in this case, after Corey died, the dad is not sticking around. He hauls booty and hides out in a motel, I believe, in Tennessee. How does that look to you, Jarrett Fiorentino? Because I say, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Deadbeat dad, covered in bruises, takes off to Tennessee and hides out.
It looks to me like consciousness of guilt, Nancy. And if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So a jury can be instructed. It's so critical in the law that when someone takes off, when they're in trouble, a jury is actually, as you know, instructed. Flight or running away is consciousness of guilt, and a jury can consider that. Think about any time people ever run away in their life. What are they running away from? Trouble. He ran away because he knew he was going to have to answer for the injuries that were all over Corey and everything that happened to Corey at that point. So it's flight, it's consciousness of guilt. It will be the final nail and a lot of nails in what undoubtedly will be the coffin of Mr. Greger.
You know what, Jerome Ferrantino, I would like to agree with you, but do I have to say O.J. Simpson, Robert Blake, Michael Jackson? I don't know what this jury's going to do. Bill Daley, former FBI, flight. Instead of sticking around, Daddy takes off, flees the jurisdiction, and hides out in a Tennessee motel.
Right, exactly, Nancy. And I mean, in addition to the legal view of this, you know, it's the emotional view, saying, you know, where was he when, you know, when people around him needed him, when the grieving mother maybe needed him, when he needed to be there to kind of, you know, close this loop with his dead son. You know, where was he at that time? And I think, you know, as much as they are talking about, you know, the mother and maybe some relatives throwing rocks and fish, you know, at Greger's parents' home, you know, this goes far beyond that, in my view, is that he wasn't there for anyone. He wasn't there for you know, just to close that final chapter in his son's life by being there when his son is being waked or perhaps being buried. It just doesn't jive with me, and it goes to that whole issue of flight and his sense of responsibility.
This trial going on right now. We wait as justice unfolds, God willing, for 6-year-old Corey. Now we stop and remember American hero, police officer Michael Husak. 37, Officer Husak shot in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife, Caitlin, and children, Nicole, Gabriel, and Samuel, sentenced to life without dad. American hero, police officer Michael Husak. Thank you to all of our guests for being with us, but especially to you for being with us tonight and every night. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.